Welcome to Stockhouse.com's Fireside Chat, where you get the lowdown on the sectors, the companies, and the trends shaping your investment dollar.
This is Stockhouse tech correspondent Galen Engen in conversation with Dennis Ensing, COO and interim CEO of Trans Gaming. That's TNG on the Venture Exchange.
So you're relatively new to the CEO position. Can you tell us what prompted the leadership change?
It goes back to earlier this year, and Vikas had some other opportunities that had been presented to him and really felt like it was time for him to pursue those, which is what he's done. He's stayed on the board, he's become vice chair of the board, but really felt like he'd gotten to the place where he could really continue to play an important role on the board, but hand the reins off to someone else in order to execute on really what the next stage of the plans were.
Now, are you guys currently actively looking for a replacement, or are you just going to let things play out right now and see where you are?
Well, look, to my knowledge, no, but it's a board committee that is
going through
in charge of search. There's and again, no search has been conducted.
Okay.
I say it was up to me to lose the position. So
mm-hmm.
Now that we're coming on 7 months,
okay.
I started in January as if it was permanent, and I said to the board, here's what the vision is that I have, and here's mm-hmm. what the plan should be, and we're well ahead of that plan
mm-hmm.
In terms of the steps that were necessary. So I'm happy with what I've done, and I think that hopefully the board will see it the same way.
Now, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit and get back to sort of the inception of GameTree. What brought that about?
That goes back to 2008,
mm-hmm.
2009. Intel was coming to the market with a new chipset, and which is still known as their Atom Core chipset. It was targeting consumer electronics industry. It was a full system on a chip that would enable CE devices,
mm-hmm.
primarily set-top boxes or over-the-top devices, or TVs themselves. And really what they were doing was coming down market from an Intel perspective in terms of contrasting their high-end computing devices, trying to get into a mass market with a chipset that had the ability now to turn those devices into what at the time Intel called smart devices.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, what Intel called smart devices and then went on to call smart TVs has become industry vernacular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now, all of the manufacturers sell what they call smart televisions. And Intel really was at the genesis of that in terms of, pushing the industry in a direction that it hadn't gone before. And the fact was, not that long ago, the biggest screen in your home was absolutely the dumbest device you had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because of our history in portability and enabling content on other platforms, as well as our success to some extent with distributing Mac-based content, Intel had done a bit of a survey of potential partners for apps. So now, if a TV cable operator or IPTV company has the opportunity to deliver now apps as part of its service offering in addition to the video service that it's delivering, the one piece of feedback that Intel had was that if you're going to deliver apps, then games should be at the top of that list. And so they felt like as they were going to market, they needed a partner to come to the market with them with a games offering.
Okay.
And they invested a little bit of money in late 2008. On top of that partnership, we did a private placement. that would fund the business plan that we submitted to them to build what is now known as GameTree TV. And that really was the beginning of it. And then we spent 2009 building out GameTree TV and starting the business development pipeline. In 2000 and maybe I'm off a year. You know what? 2011 we came to market. So I think all of those dates should be adjusted by a year. It was 2009, 2010.
You got it.
Then in early 2012, we went one step further and acquired an operating division of Oberon Media that had existing distribution with some really good partners, including Dish Network in the U.S., as well as some content catalog. And that particular acquisition, from a team perspective, has become the backbone of our business. The team that we have now has been in the connected TV business, the cloud gaming business, now for 15 years. Because it's the focus of our attention, because we're putting it at the forefront of everything we're doing, we think we have a great team to do that. And we also have among our customers an excellent foundation on which to build the revenue. That was the genesis, and just a quick snapshot in terms of a couple of other key events in getting to where we are.
Now, you guys have, of course, according to News, closed the deal with NVIDIA for Cider, and then the cross-platform conversion technologies. What were the reasonings behind that sort of departure?
The key priority I had as I stepped into the role, and I had the advantage of being around for a few years, so I built up some opinions in terms of what we were doing. And I said that we needed to focus on fewer things. We in some respects, we were hedging our bets. We had three products. We had GameTree TV, we had Cider and its related technologies, and we also still have a nice piece of IP called Swiftshader, which is a software renderer for 3D graphics, a software-based renderer. To a large extent, those businesses and those products and the businesses that were related to them were built up through the years as a bit of a hedging strategy in terms of, making sure that, we had something to fall back on. Sometimes I think it's typically Canadian. It's not the way they do things with tech companies in the U.S. in particular, but it's a way of making sure that there's a fallback plan. And I think until it was clear which business had the most upside opportunity, that was a good strategy. And I decided that it was clear. It was very clear to me, and it was clear to the board that we needed to focus on the cloud gaming industry and our business facing that sector. And consequently, that would free up a lot of resources for that effort. And also, I felt like there was a lot of investment that we'd made over the years in some technology and some R&D that really was trapped. It wasn't reflected in the market cap, and felt like it was appropriate to release that and utilize those resources toward the business that had the greatest upside and potential value for the shareholders.
Now, we touched briefly on Swiftshader. And it seems to be a very interesting sort of offering. That is, are you guys using that in some way to complement the GameTree TV offering?
No, it's not. At this juncture, it's not related to that business.
Okay.
It was a bit of a birth or an outcome of the other business, the Cider business, on the portability side. It helped us a few years ago. It helped us solve a problem. With porting some games over to platforms and devices that didn't have resident graphics cards and processing capability. Mm-hmm. That was how we got into that.
Okay.
But it really morphed into its own product. It became as the devices that we were porting for became more powerful and had the resonant requirements in terms of 3D graphics capabilities. Mm-hmm. There was no relationship anymore between SwiftShader and Cider, and they really did reside completely independently of each other.
Now, how do you see SwiftShader then within its market? Like, what is its potential?
Well, one of the reasons, and I've been public about this, we are looking at divesting of that IP, and have been actively doing that. Mostly because we're really not in a position to exploit its potential. We've done a pretty good job with on the enterprise software side. Google, Adobe, Citrix are keynote, you know, customers and users of SwiftShader. If you use Chrome as a browser on your computer, you will have a SwiftShader folder as part of your Chrome download. And Chrome will leverage that in the event that your computer or your device doesn't have the requisite 3D graphics rendering capability necessary for something that Chrome might encounter. And it will then leverage SwiftShader to do that. And that's been its typical use. What we've not been able to explore fully, just because we're not in the business, is, you know, we foresee a future, and this has clearly been evident already, where the CPU and the GPU are converging. The multi-core processors that are resident in CPUs now create, you know, the possibility and the potential for doing a lot more active processing, even of graphics, on the CPU, and that's really what SwiftShader enables. And think about mobile devices, where you could, and even smartphones and mobile devices do now have, you know, to some extent a GPU built in because of, you know, the amount of graphics processing that is being done even on those devices now. But it we said, could you imagine if you could, you know, do away with the cost of an additional piece of the architecture in those devices, which also would have the effect of reducing power consumption and heat generation. If you were using SwiftShader as a graphics renderer together with the CPU that's already on the device. That, for example, is a market that we just don't have the resources nor wherewithal to pursue, and we think that other parties do.
Right.
And that's really why, you know, that's where the opportunity exists to exit from that business and leverage we have a nice investment in a patent portfolio that's related to that goes back to 2005. We've done a pretty good job making the case through the patent successfully through the granted patent that we have some IP that several identified parties, you know, will be interested in, and, and we're going through a process to expose that IP to them and generate some interest.
Okay. Now let's get back to TransGaming, get back to GameTree. You guys had just reported your third quarter, I believe, and GameTree now has been sort of in a monetized position. We're still in a growth stage, correct?
There's we have a network. A distribution network now of over 100 million devices that we have access to. And those are smart TVs directly. Those are not through our MSO, managed service operator partners.
Right.
And we, you know, a year ago we put content out on those devices in order because it was early days on those devices. We wanted to make sure we were present right from day one to the largest extent possible. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that the TV OEMs didn't do, you know, was provide kind of back-end payment capabilities.
Okay.
And so we provided our games essentially on a free basis as long as the consumer was prepared to watch an ad, video ad. So that's how we were monetizing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were evaluating last year, evaluating how successful that business model might be.
Mm-hmm.
Drew the conclusion that by the, you know, really this year, the priority was going to be either to align with the payment systems that the OEMs implemented, because a couple of them have, or partner with a global payment system, which is what we did earlier this year. We partnered with PaymentWall, and PaymentWall now provides us the back-end billing capabilities. And one of the things that we said we were going to do, and that we are imminently about to launch, is a fuller implementation of GameTree TV on all of those devices that now gives the user the option to opt out of the ad and upgrade their membership to essentially a subscription
basis. Okay.
So for $4.99 a month, you now, you know, can escape the ads, get access to additional content. We call it a gold membership, so you'll have gold content that you can access.
So it's kind of the freemium model that currently goes through with mobile apps and such? Sort of like a freemium?
Well, that's the video ad-supported model, right?
Yeah.
The games, for $4.99 a month, you can play as much as you want.
Right.
As many games as you want. And that's the bread and butter for us has been subscription, not freemium.
Right.
A few years ago, we looked at all, and actually, you know, in a sandbox environment, in terms of a real implementation, looked at alternative models on television.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to us that because, you know, that audience is used to consuming its content on that device on a subscription basis.
Right.
The
format's already there.
Billing, especially when billing is already there.
Mm-hmm.
I can add, you know, a game subscription to my cable bill for $4.99 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? I'm already paying $100 a month,
right.
And you know, it's I can trust Transgaming. I can trust GameTree TV because it's a curated catalog. It's family friendly, you know, it's an alternative to them just sitting there, you know, the kids at least doing nothing. The subscription model for us has been proven from a revenue perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's scalable, it's repeatable, it's less of a gamble than particularly on a platform where people are used to that kind of mechanism, as opposed to, because otherwise you get into some of the same issues that you have with mobile, which is discoverability.
Yep.
Right? And people aren't sitting there on their TV, you know, browsing for content the way they do on their computers or their smartphones.
Mm-hmm.
The TV is much more of a lean back experience. It's not an active experience, and we've created a lean back application that is very consistent with how they consume content on that device forever.
Right. Now, just because I'm unfamiliar with the offering somewhat, is that how are they controlled, these games? Like, is it done through
your TV remote? So you know, with the games, predominantly, you have the option of using a game controller, but our games don't require a game controller because, again, we want the least cluttered environment possible. We want to be able to deliver the content right to the TV.
Right.
So the games are going to be up, down, right, left, predominantly. There are some exceptions to that. We have some really innovative content that leverages a brand we have called World Poker Tour, where we actually leverage... we have some exclusive rights to the World Poker Tour brand, and we've leveraged that with the development of a game that looks and operates just the way a WPT poker room would on television. So when you've seen, you know, when you've seen a tournament on TV, you know, our game looks like that. And interestingly, what we do is we actually utilize the second screen environment to deal the cards to and for you as a player to hold your chips on. So now if you're in a room with other people and you want to play our World Poker Tour game on your TV, you know, everybody holds their cards on their own device, on their iOS or their Android device. Mm-hmm. And that's one way we've, you know, leveraged the second screen as a bit of a controller or a participant in the game. And we think there's some other, there, we've got some other ways of doing that. But predominantly, we want a situation where it's simple and the TV remote itself becomes the controller.
Right. Now, do you guys develop all the content yourself, or
yes,
you
we do in license some mm-hmm. content, mm-hmm. And we do have some content sharing agreements in place with some other parties. Mm-hmm. I'm very much a proponent. We are actively programming in our networks, meaning, you know, we do one of the things that you have to do with a subscription model is, you know, you have to commit to keep the content fresh and
right.
new and make sure that the entire demographic is being appealed to. So we at a minimum are providing one new game a month on our services.
Mm-hmm.
So one way of lowering, you know, sort of the ongoing investment of that is to look for games that we can in-license and utilize and share the revenue with. And
mm-hmm.
but to date, remember I told you that Intel was the impetus for us to get into the business.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many devices out there that the content library that we have on, we actually leveraged our CIDR technology in order to get that content up and running,
mm-hmm.
Which gave us a real-time to market advantage as well as a cost advantage. And one of the things we retained in the NVIDIA transaction is a license back to that technology so that we can continue to do that.
When do you now expect, and I know it's a bit of a sort of not a gamble, but it is an estimation, when do you expect to hit sort of a profitable stance or a cash positive flow?
Yeah, we've done a lot to cut the expenses,
mm-hmm.
and that was, you know, among, you know, I talked about one of the priorities this year was focus. That was the key priority, but if I looked at some of the related key initiatives,
mm-hmm.
The related key initiatives had to do with revenue being paramount. That the key to getting profitable is revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll come back to that one in a minute. And mm-hmm. the other one was sustainability and leveraging our own resources, albeit, you know, the cash that we had, that we now have, the value that we could unlock from our technology investments, that was going to be critical to not just sustain the business as it is,
mm-hmm.
but to fuel our investments, you know, to grow the business. And related to that was cost containment. And, you know, even if I look to what our current burn is compared to what it was, gross burn compared to a year ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're down $1 million a quarter.
Okay.
That's we're as low as we've been in a long time. Our aggregate burn now,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of gross expenses, is just over $3 million. So what we've done is and the priority there was to get us in a position where we could be profitable sooner, so that revenue would become accretive profitably much sooner. And that was a critical part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, if you put sort of our trajectory of revenue and our current expenses together, you know, my plan is at the latest, you know, we have well more than a year's worth of cash runway now, just with the results of the NVIDIA transaction,
mm-hmm.
and the balance sheet is further strengthened by the fact that there's no debt.
Okay.
Right. So there's been a massive change in the financial position from Q3.
Mm-hmm.
and our year-end results will be coming out in probably a month or so. And we'll provide some pro forma disclosure with that. But, you know, if you take the results of the NVIDIA transaction and the repayment of the debt, and then the offloading of the expenses that we've done, at the latest, we'll be profitable by the end of fiscal 2016.
What do you think the investors can now look forward to as far as milestones are concerned for the next 12 months?
I know that the historical reputation that Trends Gaming has had has really been, we've been underachieving against our shareholders' expectations. And look, I think we're the first ones to be extremely disappointed with not ourselves as much as the potential that we saw in the market. We were early in this game in terms of this latest generation of devices. You know, in 2008, 2009, the expectation was very high in terms of the next refresh cycle by the operators. We had several operators who were doing some refresh cycles of their set-top boxes, but some of the financial conditions at the time, from a macro standpoint, made many, many others delay that decision.
Right.
And, you know, so that became a factor. That was sort of factor, that was one of the early factors. So, you know, the one thing that I said to in my first public conference call was that this was going to, my strategy was not going to be one of home runs. This business was not going to create shareholder value with swinging for the fences. Huge fan of the Blue Jays, love their offense. But, you know, their offense makes up for the lack of pitching. Until today, David Price apparently has been acquired by the Blue Jays today, so that's going to help them make a run for the playoffs.
Absolutely.
But the reality is, the Blue Jays are an example of, you know, how I don't want to run the business. Right? I think that we can, using that baseball analogy, we're going to get a lot more long-term mileage from a bunch of singles and doubles. So the milestones are going to be less noticeable, but I'm going to be more transparent about them. I said that, you know, launching a different revenue model on the smart televisions was a key initiative for this year. We will be launching imminently, and that revenue will build slowly. That's going to be, that's kind of a quiet event that'll happen that will, you know, start to contribute to revenues slowly. We are, with our current operators, we are, you know, implementing initiatives both on the marketing side as well as on the user side that will continue to help revenue grow incrementally. But there's no magic bullet to change the revenue trajectory other than possibly through M&A. One of the things that Focus enables me to do is we're only in, you know, if Game Tree TV is everything we're about, and I've been able to unlock some of the value from the technology investments that we had, now I've got some currency to look at. I think there's a real opportunity to do some acquisitions and consolidate some market share and commit to doing it profitably. And we've done that once before, and it made a big difference. So those are the things that, you know, that I think are important indicators. And at the end of the day, you know, I think the stock will respond because revenue growth is now evident from the market. There's nothing else really that I can do that is anything better than just executing on the plan and proving that the market is real and that it can grow at scale.
Now, what do you think the key challenges are that are you going to be facing over the next 12 months to sort of make everything fall into place?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of how to do that in a way, answer that in a way that, you know, kind of reflects what we've talked about you know, publicly more than anything else. You know, I think the right pieces are in place for, you know, growing the business the way that I've described. described.
Mm-hmm.
One of my challenges, and it goes back to, you know, the opportunity to build the business and take advantage of some opportunities to scale through an acquisition or two. One of the challenges I have, frankly, is the stock price.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I prefer to use the stock as currency than cash.
Right.
That's just really hard to do with the stock where it is.
Right.
But then, you know, it's incumbent on us to execute in order to affect that positively. And at the same time, you know, I'm definitely going to be preserving cash. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a bit of a juggling act
mm-hmm.
That we have to perform. I still think we have operators. From a challenges standpoint, we still have operators who are, you know, haven't made decisions about the future of
mm-hmm.
their own devices.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are opting for less than optimal devices.
Mm-hmm.
We now support, you know, in addition to supporting the Intel platform, we're very active with HTML5. We like to have. We like to support a platform that that's not unique to any specific operator
right.
or TV, just from an efficiency standpoint, and it allows us to reuse our content across a lot more channels.
Right.
But HTML5, yeah, you look at our content catalog on our Intel-based devices is, from a user gameplay perspective, much richer, much better.
Mm-hmm.
HTML5 is less than optimal for that, but it's still a great large screen experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the other thing that I fuss over and that we fuss over is ensuring that people on those televisions will be able to find Game Tree TV.
Mm-hmm.
And enjoy that experience. And you know, we're going to pull out all the stops that we can in partnership with the OEMs, as well as other, you know, social media marketing, in order to help that without spending loads of money.
Now, just because I've heard other people talk about this, as well as myself thinking about it periodically, is, do you ever consider mobile gaming to be something that might edge in on your guys' market?
It already has.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not at all. You know, I that's not a surprising question, and it doesn't really keep us awake at night.
Okay.
It's a totally different experience.
Okay.
It already has, in that, you know, Google, through Google Play, is making a play in TV, and it's through Android TV.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some, you know, you have access to all of the Google Play. If you have an Android-enabled device, TV, you
mm-hmm.
have access to Google Play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reality is, you know, there may be thousands of games in there, but they're not optimized for television. They're still a mobile gaming experience, and they're terrible to play.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so the what I refer to as the lean back experience,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the TV remote controller as the controller,
mm-hmm.
Changed the play experience pretty dramatically.
Right.
And then the other thing is, you know, how we position both to operators as well as the TV OEMs is, you know, our content is curated and can be trusted, and
mm-hmm.
and to the purse holders. Remember, what we haven't talked about is what our target demographic is.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the hardcore gamer is a market that's already well served with consoles,
right.
or even a PC, right? High end content, which is the business that we also used to be in,
mm-hmm.
that market is very well served.
Mm-hmm.
Where we really see a huge opportunity, and it's reflected in the demographics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, in addition to the research. Shows that, you know, we've had some pretty massive change in the last 5 years in terms of connected devices.
Mm-hmm.
And how those devices are connected. You know, five years ago in 2010, they were TVs were predominantly connected through those consoles, through the game consoles.
Right.
And, you know, in 10 years, fast forward 10 years, which is now only 5 years from now,
mm-hmm.
the bulk of those connections are going to be through set-top boxes, smart TVs directly.
Mm-hmm.
And 30% of all TVs are going to be connected. And smart TVs really are the winner at the expense of the game consoles. But more interestingly, which is actually reflected in the mobile market, there are two times more adult female gamers than young male gamers. And those adult female gamers also are, there's a lot of them who happen to be mothers and who are the holder of the purse strings. Right, and you know, that's why a trusted catalog of family-friendly content is an important, you know, value pillar that we present to our operators and to the TV OEMs, and then ultimately to the buyer. You know, rather than forcing that person to sit there when the kids want to play a game, and rather than forcing that person to scour the universe for an appropriate game, you know, and then to download it, judge its whether it's appropriate or not, and then to download it and pay for it, you know, a $4.99 monthly subscription, you know, is peace of mind. But it's one of the things that I wanted to highlight in terms of the differentiation, and that's where we are also different than mobile. That's why TV is also different than mobile.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a single user on their own device. You know, this is a living room based device, where there's people coming and going. It's ultimately social in the way that TV is social, not the way that we've sort of learned what social is. You know, in terms of the virtual interactions, you know, these are real interactions that go on in terms of the playing experience, and people like to watch other people play on that device.
Right.
But it is a family experience, and in our catalog does reflect, you know, all of the demographics, but we really do hone in on who's making the purchase decision.
You mentioned earlier that the share price at this point not necessarily where you'd like it to be. Do you anticipate any kind of rollback, perhaps, or do you think the revenue should be able to help take care of that?
You know what? All I can say is, you know, I took this role on because of how exciting this business is and how big of an opportunity it could be. You know, if there was any skepticism at all, then, you know, why would I have put myself in this position? And frankly, you know, I viewed it also as we can only go up from here.
Right.
But we had to execute. Right. The NVIDIA transaction was actually what I thought of was going to be step two of, you know, of kind of that focus exercise. I actually thought SwiftShader would be step one, and as it turns out, you know, and we partnered with NVIDIA at the right time, and that was a win-win transaction all around.
Mm-hmm.
And now it gives us, you know, the time and the leverage in order to do a better SwiftShader transaction, and at the same time be free to focus and grow the Gaintree TV market.
And final, just to sort of put a button on this, where do you see trans gaming in the next 24 months?
You know, it's to some extent it's a fragmented market. We think that, you know, we're among the leaders in that market. I think in 24 months, my goal is to be the leader, both in terms of, you know, the distribution network we have and the market share we have, but also from a revenue standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
With a rich catalog and, you know, multiple gaming experiences. Gaintree TV is a specific product servicing a specific market. The other thing I haven't touched on that will become important in the next 24 months is We also envision having separately having premium content with other revenue models associated with them. And one of the ones that I have touched on publicly that I consider premium content is social casino.
Okay.
Back to your comment about mobile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, slots is the number one game played on mobile. And you know, at the risk that somebody else is going to beat us, but I don't think they will. We do want to make a big splash on the smart TV side with social casino. So that's, you know, it's not real money gambling, but it's still very compelling content, and the revenue model is essentially it's always free to play with the ability to accelerate by buying more chips, right?
Because
a number of free chips a day that allows you to play a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a real case to be made based on the success in mobile that TV is an untapped market for social casino. So I think in 2 years we'd really like to be the dominant premium content provider, as well as the dominant family curated content provider as well. You know, I appreciate the support that we've had from our shareholders, and continue to hope for patience.
Well, I appreciate your time, Dennis. Take care.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.